Welcome to The Revenue Architects. I'm your host, Jeff Ignacio. In this podcast, we're going to bring incredible business athletes together. We'll explore how to build a go-to-market capability for businesses, no matter the size or shape. We'll remix content from a bunch of different places, bring in guests, deep dive into incredible topics. So with that in mind, I want to thank you for joining us. And now on to this episode of The Revenue Architects. Today, I'm joined by Mark Rogers, former CRO of InPartner for 5 years. He joined back in 2015 and as the SVP of Strategic Accounts, his new role in alliances. He's responsible for establishing global strategic relationships with the industry's leading CRM solutions and service providers, as well as building a world-class partner ecosystem, which is what we're hoping to cover today in this podcast episode. Mark brings extensive executive leadership experience and success in sales, channel sales, and business development. Most recently, he was the VP of channel sales for the Americas for Akamai Technologies, where he grew the channel annual recurring revenue by 40% annually during his tenure. And prior to Akamai, Mark was VP of business development at Aternity and Novell, and has also held executive business development and channel leadership roles at Intel, IBM, Folio Corporation, and Caldera. Mark, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Jeff. It's a pleasure.
So we were introduced with a session that you hosted for Emergence Capital. Upkeep is an Emergence Capital company. And I was extremely impressed by the content and the reality of what you brought to the table in terms of channel. And I frankly haven't had anyone talk about partners or alliances on this podcast, and thought it'd be great to have you on.
Really excited. That was a lot of fun. I'll put on a light here so it looks like I'm not in the dark, but a lot of fun. And this is an area that's a little bit of religion for me, that obviously I've gone back and forth, CRO channels and the like, and had both. And it is without question, everywhere I have been, no matter what your route to market is, you got to have a very, very deep strategy, and you got to have the tools and so forth to help you. In this case, on the channel side and the alliances, I'm really glad you asked me to share some ideas here. So looking forward to it.
So for the uninitiated, you know, the term direct and indirect may or may not make sense for certain folks. So could we maybe give like a Webster's dictionary definition of what we mean by indirect or channel?
You bet. When you talk about direct sales, we often think about even going to inside sales and so forth, but anything that a company takes with their own employees to attack an opportunity or a market with salespeople or direct salespeople. On the indirect side, it's really selling through others or supporting or providing influence or whatnot. Various levels of partnerships allow you to expand your reach, access emerging markets, whatever it might be, when you actually are working and partnering with other companies. And that's what we call indirect. Make sense?
Absolutely. Now, I think it might be a little misleading. It's not always about sales. It might be maybe about some other portions of the value chain, particularly around go-to-market. Folks who, like, I'm familiar purchasing software, and oftentimes you'll see there's an SOW involved, and the folks who are implementing my software are not employees of the company that I just purchased from. So, you know, there's a certain element of breaking down the entire value chain around your go-to-market and really figuring out what makes the most sense in terms of direct or indirect. Obviously, we're talking about sales here. So, you know, when and where should companies consider building out maybe a channel program?
It's an interesting question because there's a lot of things you have to ask first, and that is why? Why even have a third party work with you one way or another? And there are a lot of questions, right? It's like, for example, you think about, do I have full access to markets that make the most sense for me? That could be the ability to fill in a solutions portfolio where I may not have enough development resources, for example, to build all the capabilities that a client may want. Do I have the ability to actually deliver a solution to a client in such a way capabilities that they need me to? All of these questions indicate the comprehensive approach to solving customers' problems. And smart companies will sit back and say, look, especially a younger, maybe an early stage, a B round, whatever, you don't have the capital, nor do you have the resources to get it all done. So as you think about the timing of getting into when do I look at a channel, a lot of this has to do with the market you're approaching, what experience do you want to provide for your clients, what's going to differentiate you from your competition that will allow you to attack and take advantage of where you could do best. And this is where I think an early stage A company, for example, Series A, probably a little bit early. You need to establish yourself. Sometimes you're selling vapor, you're selling a message. As you get into the B rounds and all the rest of it, here you're starting to really make a name for yourself, starting to establish a brand, and you're starting to say, which markets really make the most difference for me, where I can really penetrate. That's usually when we see people start to get serious about looking at third parties and channels.
Now, you've talked about maybe some of the prerequisite thinking. It's about, you know, let's look at capabilities where we're not so great at it, maybe augment that, or, hey, these are greenfield areas that we just don't have the capital or the resources to invest and put those boots on the ground. Oftentimes, I'll see channel inquiries come in via email or a LinkedIn request. Hey, I noticed that you're potentially linked to creating synergies or partner programs. And so, you know, those inbound inquiries, how do you sort of think about the synergy around that and figuring out the funnel around vetting out true partners? Because if I think about my role in RevOps, there's two funnels that I'll manage. If it's a affiliate model, I'm trying to figure out how do you submit your leads through a form, and so it hits my CRM and I can properly attribute where your leads are, and depending on how we pay you out, how do we credit you? Then secondly, deal registration is, you know, how do I make sure that, you know, if you're reselling, how do we make sure that we're not, you know, conflicting with each other, my direct reps versus the partners that we're working with? Then the second funnel is partners coming in. Is there some sort of partner funnel that you're classically considering and that we're vetting out? And, you know, just like a sales opportunity, there's a partner opportunity. What does that look like in your world?
It's a great challenge. And a lot of it is sometimes you get very excited early in the game when suddenly somebody like, I don't know, Microsoft gets interested in you and what you're doing. The first thing you say is, I'd love to get Microsoft. I'd love to get, you know, Tata Consulting Services. Would love to get Accenture, right? All these big names. But you have to go back to the question and say, why? What is it that they, you have to ask it from two perspectives. What can I do for them? And what can they do for me? Partnerships, after all, are two-way. You're never going to find a company that is just going to be there just to build your pipeline. As much as we dream about that, nobody's in that business, right? And if they are, please let me know because I want to sign them up now. But if you think about the same way of attacking a market, the same way of saying when you turn your reps, what is the best way to distribute a product? Is it you know, going to a marketplace, for example, which is very popular now, and the ability to integrate simply in SaaS solutions can be plugged in, click, you know, off you go, swipe a credit card and off you go. You know, the ease of access from a customer to your solution, the ease of acquisition, the ease of use, all of those things become paramount to the most successful growth companies. It's the same thing with a partner. What does the partner do for me that I cannot do myself? And what can I do for that partner that would keep that partner stuck to me and not someone else? These are rudimentary questions that have to be asked before you suddenly jump around and say, oh, gee, I got this love letter, you know, from Microsoft. I got to jump all over this. It could be they want to steal your tech, no offense to Microsoft, but it could be that somebody is interested in your technology and wants to kind of look at what you're doing. You got to be very careful about that. To me, again, and I don't want to go too deep here, but you have to ask very, very hard questions and be very deliberate about how you approach it. The same way that you profile a client, a customer, a market, or whatnot, you have to profile a partner. And that partner has to be, you've got to be able to do the things that make them, right, successful. By the same token, they must be able to deliver to you the things that will make you successful. Otherwise, you're wasting your time.
That belies the point. When I'm typically working with heads of marketing or heads of sales, we're thinking about the ideal customer profile or ICP. What you're referring to is maybe an IPP. And that's not a term that I see bandied about, but I can see the value in it. And a couple of things there that stood out to me was there's a power relationship between, say, a startup and one of these large systems integrators, they're going to have, obviously, you're not going to be that significant to them. You're going to sort of be bundled into their catalog, right? And yep. Who knows what page you're buried on. But then to the startup, you know, that large integrator is everything. So that's an interesting thing. Second is not just the power, but also the value that both partners are getting out of this. So really thinking through working with either a medium size or a large provider and figuring out what makes the most sense in providing value. Because ultimately, when I worked in finance at Google, channel was a large percentage of our overall revenue, our overall top line. And when we did a breakdown of our partners, they weren't the largest integrators out there. They were regional players. They were local players, they went to bat. They went to the mat for our services, and we put them on these milestones and metrics, and allowed them to earn their way up to greater benefit. And as their business grew, our business grew at the same time, and there was this mutual win-win. And I always thought that was a super fascinating part. Very, very different.
I don't mean to interrupt, but you had 100% of their mind share, I'll bet. And that's the difference. You had them dying to be within the Google partner ecosystem. Whereas if you were someone else going after an Accenture or someone else, you're one of many, 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 many great companies. And while you may fill a specific gap for them or be able to create a nice market for them, you're just one of many. Normally, a large company like that, they'll usually partner with the top two, maybe three, that dominate a particular market or segment. On the other hand, if you are a company like Google and you're picking partners, you're going to find a lot of people who will drop everything to make that happen. So a lot of it is, what is your position in the marketplace? When we're smaller, you know, give you a quick example, and we did talk about this during our session with Emergence Capital. You know, we were just very pleased to have one of the largest offshoring, rightshoring companies come to us who was exceptional at managed service provision, provider of managed services, and they wanted to build out a channel advisory service, and they looked at, unbeknownst to us, they looked at all of the companies out there in the PRM space, partner relationship management, which is one of the key solutions we offer. We were very, very humbled to learn that they felt that we had the best solution, even up against Salesforce and a lot of monster companies. And so they put their bet on us. And you can bet that we put our bet and everything else on them. And what a great opportunity that was. That's different than you going out and trying to recruit someone of that size and trying to get their attention. It's still possible, but the approach is much, much different. And so again, sometimes it's luck, right, that allows you to get into these things and do well.
Now, I don't want this to be a commercial, obviously, but there's a lot to unpack there. You know, as someone who is who's in charge of managing like a technology stack or a value solution, something that's, you know, when you look at a CRM, it's internal focused, right? So the employees of a company log in, they're looking at their pipeline, they're figuring out their leads, they're looking at their book of business. But there's not really that external gateway and a reverse funnel, so to speak, where someone can log in and see, what is my contribution? And there's solutions out there now with the PRM space. But I found that, you know, most Salesforce admins or team of ones, director of sales operations, they have the Salesforce background, they have Salesforce experience. But then you start tackling on, you know, channel, layering on PRM, they're in a whole new world, right? So I would be very curious to hear from you, like, what are the top considerations in making sure that you're building the right process, enablement, reporting between a provider and a partner? I'm very curious, you know, if you're in the RevOps seat, like, what would you be looking for?
You know, it's an interesting question. Let me make sure I understand what you're asking for. You did bring up a little bit about the CRM being very focused on direct sales again, and what we sell as a company with our employees and whatnot. And then the idea, that's one, you know, realm of visibility that basically covers one route to market. The whole opportunity that you're given when you look at partners is, can you provide an experience and visibility into many different routes to market and still provide the same kind of support, the kind of stickiness that will allow those partners, just like a customer, to stay with you. Let me go back and ask you specifically the question that was beyond that, though, because you were asking the difference between a provider and a partner.
Let's go into that a little bit, right? So, let's play the scenario. You're a Series B, Series C funded startup. You've obviously mastered your product market fit, at least for one segment or one area. Now you figured out your messaging. Yeah, you've obviously scaled up to a certain dollar point. You've now packed on some weight. Your sales team is double, and now you're looking at, okay, you know, our growth is declining in our core area. We need to either enter a new geo, we need to add in a new product, or we need to have a new channel. The new channel hopefully leads to the first one of the first one or both of the first two that I just mentioned. And so when you're going through getting a PRM, you look at Salesforce and you're the head of RevOps. Okay, well, shoot. How do we gather interest from partners? How do we track this? Typically, it's in a spreadsheet at first, and you're like, all right, let me flash up the spreadsheet to the executives. That's not going to cut it. You need something more formal than that. Then the second thing is, okay, they're going to start sending us leads or deals, yep, or bundling us in or bringing us over. Like, how do we communicate with one another? So I'm just curious, like, as a, you know, the person who's responsible for that process, like, what are the things that we should be thinking about in order to enable a fruitful partnership?
More than anything else, if I can create an experience just like I do for a client that makes it so easy for them to consume my solution, meaning, are they able to buy from the routes that they want to buy from? Maybe they want you to sell it to them. Maybe they want to go click on a link and, you know, go to a marketplace. Maybe they want a partner. Maybe they want someone they've trusted over many years. As we look at our clients, we've got to ask ourselves, what is the best way to meet their needs in that way? The same with a partner. When we go to a partner, you need to create an experience that makes it so easy for them to be able to find what they want. And think about what a partner does. On the sales side, just like a sales rep, they need to be trained. They need to be enabled. They need to be certified, whether it's on the technical side, the solution side, whatever it might be. They need to be able to solve business problems. And so how are you going to enable them to translate a business problem into utilizing your capability into a solution that solves that problem? Same thing that we do with sales reps. In addition to that, you need to be able to make it as simple as possible for them to price and quote. So many times they need to be given access to CPQ solutions, just like we do with our sales reps, so that they're not waiting around for permission from some CFO or finance guy to say, okay, 3 weeks later, we approve your quote, and by that time, the deal's gone. All of it is about creating experience that gives them what they need when they need it as quickly as possible and does not confuse them by having to search through tons of stuff that's useless to them, that's irrelevant. So if I can segment the content of information that I provide, make it easy for them to grab, easy for them to consume, and then be able to transact like my salespeople do quickly and effectively, they're going to come to me. And I do that through a portal. I do that through my partner relationship solution that allows a portal, which is nothing more than a landing space that creates this experience. It's going to be integrated to learning management systems that your same salespeople use and internally. It'll be linked to finance systems. It'll be linked to a CPQ. It'll have either through an SSO or whatever it might be, through data level integration, whatever you're providing is making it so simple for that partner to be successful. And when you send the message to the partners that we care about your success, it's not just about margin, not just about MDF and stuff like that we're going to give you, not just about rebates. It's about creating an entire seamless, simple, smooth experience that says, I'm going to stay with these guys because I can make money and be successful. And by the way, my client's thrilled with the product that they are giving me to sell them. Make sense?
Oh, absolutely. So beyond the technology and the process, you talked about some of the incentives or the economic arrangements between both parties. You mentioned MDF, market development funds or rebates. Could you go into some of the tools in the bag, in the toolkit that allow one to build a fruitful partnership? And when does one make sense over the other?
It's a great, again, challenge. We keep saying this, but it's really true. When you think about why the partner's doing business with you, they're not doing it out of altruism. They're not doing it because they like your shoes or they think you're a cool guy. They're doing it because they know and feel that they can scale their business and do so very, very effectively as opposed to going to the guy down the road. And the way you attract them is a lot of companies will start off by saying, you know what, I'm going to measure how much revenue they drive. I'm going to hold you to revenue. So we talk about business plans and what the KPIs and the things that we hold our salespeople to, and they know very clearly what the mission is. And if they do X, they're going to be paid Y. It's you know, as simple as possible. Unfortunately, not everybody as a CRO, it wasn't always as easy as that, because sometimes these, you know, these reps will read, they'll play your comp plan like a Stradivarius, right? Read it like a lawyer. Well, partners do the very same thing. So just because I tell you I'm going to give you 25 points of margin means nothing to them. What they really care about is, first of all, you know, how do I sell your solution? How does your solution solve a business problem? They care about what is it that you do that sends a message to the client that they will trust you, that they will, you will care for them, that you're in it for the long haul, that this is not just a simple, because many of these partners, you recruit them because they have access to that customer. And that access to the customer was earned through trust and through a great deal of sacrifice and investment on the part of that partner. Therefore, they're going to be very, very scrutinizing in terms of which partners they do products they decide to bring in. So your job is to say, what are the things that I can incentivize them with that would make them successful instead of only incentivizing them on the ultimate result? Do you see the difference? If you think about this, when I was at Akamai, we hired a wonderful consultant at the time, and that consultant now has moved on to Salesforce, interestingly enough. And her name is Tiffany Bova, and she's awesome. And Tiffany came in and looked at my plan and looked at our plan and said, hey, Mark, this is really great that you're offering up to 40 margin points, but this isn't what partners care about. What you should be doing is incentivizing them by saying, when you finish this certification, when you are enabled and when you have learned and been trained on the product, or when you get me this many deals to register, which I'll protect you when you bring them to me, when you take my leads that I give you and turn them around and start going after them within 24 hours or whatever my policy is, that's what you should be incentivizing. So now what you're doing is you're incentivizing the behaviors that lead to results as opposed to the result itself. That difference is what creates the kind of partners that will be sticky, that will be successful, and that ultimately you will be able to then repeat in terms of what are the behaviors I need to find to recruit my next partners. Make sense?
100%. By the way, I was going to pull Tiffany's book off my shelf here.
There you go. She's awesome. I love her.
Growth IQ.
There you go. There you go. And Tiffany's smart. And I'll tell you, she changed my whole strategy when I was at Akamai. I got to tell you that. And our whole strategy.
That's brilliant. Yeah. She said something extremely memorable to me. She said, because I was talking to her about redesigning like our sales flow. And she said, customers don't care that they're in stage one versus stage two versus stage three. They don't know any of that. All they know is that you're trying to solve their problem. And there's a seamless fluidity, maybe even going forward and backwards through that problem solving. And someone like me who's in RevOps, you clearly see these deals, it's nonlinear. Like, oh, how do I track how much time we're spending in this stage versus this? Did you check off all the boxes? Can I tell you that you've moved forward in forecasting? Certain like tactical things like that. And she just like really opened up my mind with that one sentence.
Yeah, I love it.
That's awesome. So Mark, we had this last segment of the podcast. It's called the Rorschach test. Uh-huh. And how this works is I'll say a few words and I'd like to hear the first thing that comes to your mind.
Okay, I'll try this one. I'm nervous, but we'll try it.
All right. First-time channel builder.
A first-time channel builder. Struggle. Challenge. Loss of sleep. How many words can I give you?
Enablement success.
Holy grail. Holy grail. Because then your partners, you can replicate them. You know how to modify their behavior, and that's key.
State of channel technology.
Improving dramatically. A lot of that is because of SaaS. A lot of that is because of self-service.
I'd argue we need to get my kin, folks in ops, sped up on PRMs much faster than we are trying to hack away at bringing those in. deal velocity.
Again, holy grail. One of the ultimate goals that you, if you do it right and you enable the partners correctly and you listen to them and make their success the most important thing, you'll get the deals. You'll get the velocity you're looking for.
And lastly, channel pipeline management.
Challenging on the one hand. However, because of things like PRMs, because of the new best practices and approaches such as what we just referred to with Tiffany, far more achievable.
That's amazing. Mark, I want to thank you for coming on to the pod. And lastly, where can you know our listeners find out more about you and PRM?
You bet. I would stop short of giving you my ATM PIN number and social security number. But what you can do is reach out to me directly at Mark, M-A-R-K, dot Rogers, R-O-G-E-R-S, at impartner, impartner.com. And just send me a quick email. I'm happy to do it. I'm also on LinkedIn. What I'll do is I'll follow up with you, Jeff, and send you the LinkedIn link. Would love to hear from you any way I can help. Very grateful for the opportunity. And thank you, Jeff. This has been a wonderful opportunity for me.
Awesome. Thank you so much.